Nice to check in again with State Representative Jackie Chan of Quincy for our weekly Beacon Hill updates, if we will. Hey, Jackie, nice to see you.
Hey, Joe, it's great to see you, too. We're continuing to be another week of talking heads.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. People are getting really interested in our dining rooms and our bedrooms and see what's going on in the background.
I had to learn all about Zoom lighting one day.
Is the house back at the state house at all?
No, I haven't been physically at the state house for a couple of weeks. I was in there to get some law books, and my staff helped out and got me some my plants back home that has been suffering. So it's been pretty much a quiet building. They're running on a skeleton crew of essential personnel only to operate sessions. But even a lot of these speaker staff is working remotely, coming in only when necessary. And those who actually look at the legislature's website and see it, some of the pictures of membership, I mean, there are a lot of older folks that are high vulnerability risk to COVID-19 that are elected. So, add to the complications, some people have campaigns this year. It's harder to see people right now, and if you're immune compromised or much older, or some combination, it's going to be a challenging cycle.
Yeah, I think, is it the Senate that's starting to ease back into it just a little bit?
Yes. Here's the funny thing. Someone had to go first and trying to find a method to hold a session. So the House went first. So the Senate is actually taking some lessons from the House, and they're adjusting the rules again this week to do some of the things we've been doing to try to smooth out their process and keep themselves and their staff safe in the midst of all of this. As the people see in the news, Boston has been seeing a lot of the protesters. As you heard from all the doctors and immunologists that the spread of the virus is a high possibility because of the continuous close contact with other people as part of the protest. And, that's all over Boston Common and the State House, and they're very unavoidable. So, we want to keep ourselves safe as well. We encourage everyone's First Amendment rights. We try and also reduce the chances of people catching it, especially the older members.
Right. As we've learned from this, younger members can be carriers and not even know it, and then, bring it home to folks who are more vulnerable. So using all the precautions that are dictated is just wise.
Yep. It's a risk based on time. The longer you have exposure to a possibility of someone with COVID, increases your odds of catching.
To that end, can we talk a little bit about a discussion on Beacon Hill regarding these protests and how they might impact policing in Massachusetts going forward?
Yes, the governor unveiled a proposal on an outline more accurately during the news regarding uniform police standards, some training issues, and so forth. The Speaker of the House working the Black Latino Caucus, and I had to inject myself because obviously I'm not Black Latino as part of the conversation to talk about, again, police standards and training and banning a certain procedures such as chokeholds, which is making its way throughout the country, whether it be a dictate from the police department as an internal policy or a legislature on the council level or state legislature's level to engage in that conversation. And my colleague, Liz Miranda, who's a freshman rep out of the Dorchester area, has filed legislation to basically dictate police policy. And I'll be frank with you, I'm still learning as I go on this stuff, as I'm waiting to go on a lot of other things coming across my table, on my bedroom desk more accurately. Hmm. They're talking about, again, police procedures, better evaluation of mental health issues and potentially other need or help for police officers, the under duress, better identification, things like that. But also, I think you've seen in news talk about not shooting people in the back, for example, and unless you can demonstrate some imminent danger, which I find to be a very challenging term to put in something in statute, right? And what defines an imminent danger or threat to yourself and others. And I think that's going to be very difficult to put into law. But I understand the premise of it. Same thing on restraint. You shouldn't have to use deadly restraint unless it's absolutely positively necessary. you have four against one, one would hope that you could figure something out. We have superior numbers versus one versus four, and you got a police officer in danger. So, you know, there's different circumstances, and they're trying to legislate some police policies to do that. They also talk about ideas regarding following police records on a personnel level. So one of the concerns been presented is that if you have a bad actor who's been disciplined or at least reported many times in one police department, the leaves are transferred to another police department, it's almost like a clean slate. So if somebody pipes up from the other place to the new place, nobody knows what your potential issues were prior that were investigated, even if you're cleared, the fact your complaints filed, maybe there was nothing really going on. It was probably fine. The complaints were false. Or conversely, the complaints were very legitimate, and your new employee should know about those complaints, especially since you're in law enforcement, you have a firearm, you have a high responsibility to the public to keep us safe. It's also responsible to the public and all the other things our police officers do that are great for us. So, there's a lot of conversations on a broad level on every front. From police procedures to training to some more accountability and transparency.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised to learn Massachusetts is, I guess, one of only four states where police officers aren't, quote unquote, licensed by the state. Although I believe the training requirements here in the state are far superior than in other states.
Well, we agree with that. I mean, we do a better job than other places. But for example, I didn't realize that until this week that there's no uniform training academy. So the city of Boston, the city of Lowell, both of them do not use the state training academy for the police officers. They engage in an alternative training academy. The MBTA police do not use the uniform training academy with the state. So they may have uniform policies, but they have to be specific, some do not want to pay for or participate. I didn't also realize that certain police officers do not have to go through training again to work in a different police department. So, for example, if you're one police officer trained in one way, you come to another community and your police was trained in a different academy, there is no requirement for you to be trained in the academy of the municipality you're working in. I didn't realize that. The other thing that I didn't quite realize was that even though there's, we like to have some uniform training, what does this training look like? And I actually don't know yet. These are things I'm trying to learn. I advocated to the speaker's office to remind them that you got to be cautious of the one size fit all approach. So a smaller town police force has a different challenge than a large city police force.
Yeah.
Different crimes, different geographic zones because of road systems, and of course, different population demographics. So we have a large non-English speaking population that you have to help and protect. It has a different than a small rural community. So, this is part of the challenges of a uniform police training that we really have to have as part of our conversation.
Right. Yeah. It might be a combination of both, uniform training plus individualized community training on top of that too.
That's correct. There are higher violent crimes in certain counties and certain communities than others. And if you've been a police officer for a long period of time in a, let's say 10 years in a low violent crime area and find yourself in a high violent crime area, it's a whole different ball game of training and stress levels and all that. So same thing, you go from a very engaged community and you go to a less engaged area, it has a whole different issue too. So this is kind of part of the danger of one size fit all, but I do understand there's a need for some meaningful training so that when there's a look at practice and standards, we have a benchmark to look at as opposed to have to pick up the benchmarks of every single different group.
Yeah. How are the state police trained, Jackie? What's the protocols there?
They have a state police training academy.
Okay.
So we are kind of like statewide licensed because of the requirement they have to at least follow the statewide training methods. So, that's kind of part of it as well. But the licensing issue is, I'm hearing a little bit from law enforcement's concern, because that's your bread and butter livelihood. If your license is revoked, it's licensed statewide. You can't work anywhere else.
Right.
Which is an interesting question, right? The question becomes, if you are unable to meet the license requirements, so to speak, or the requirements of protocol, or the training requirements, or whatever you want to call it, you're going to be denied work in any of the police department. But if you failed the police procedures in one place and you quit before they terminate you and you work in another place, that's an interesting question also, right? And the other side is, provide a reference. So, obviously, we have a right to look at any of the person's prior employment on the resume, make a phone call and say, hey, what was the deal with this guy? Looking to hire, what's your opinion?
Right.
The question is, should law enforcement provide that same opinion?
Yeah. I guess, how much do you think race, though, plays a part in how this discussion came about when it comes to policing and police motivation?
Well, I acknowledge the fact that, police can do bad things to people that are not people of color. I mean, people who are white can be brutalized by police. I mean, it's not like I hear complaints just from specific demographics. But it's been magnified in the news because of the disproportional statistics associated with particularly black people in prison systems, brought up for offenses. There's more video cam of other states. I don't speak to Massachusetts directly. It's really a lot of other states you're watching the news and the procedures associated with it. But I also want to remind folks, there are other people that are impacted. Disproportional numbers by statistics is very disproportional in the black community. And that's hard to deny. And as more footage comes up of body cameras and people coming forward about their experiences, I hope it allows other people who had bad experiences, whoever they are, to also come forward and say, hey, yeah, this happened to me too. And bring greater light to this issue. Whether the media covers those stories, well, I don't control what the media covers. And I agree this is a huge tragedy. I don't know what to say anymore about it. I mean, it speaks for itself. But what I'm hoping is that, through this, George Floyd and many other people whose family has been very badly impacted, as well as these protests, helps other people willing to come forward and say, hey, this impacted me also.
Yeah, it might be a second wave of the Me Too movement, if you will, when it comes to this particular issue.
Well, any one of us can potentially be a victim of anything.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that we don't want to have is having sorry, my phone has buzzed. Let me get this the buzzer, because I know I watched myself last time and noticed the buzzing. none of us should be subject to unfair treatment.
Yeah.
Treatment that is frankly hurtful. Physically hurtful, emotionally hurtful, by people that we trust to keep us safe. Even if I do something wrong, I trust that I'll be treated well and humanely, regardless of anything else.
Sure.
And like I said, they have a superior position. They're the police officers. They have authority that none of us have.
Yeah, they are enforcers, by mandate, enforcing a law that's been enacted by the people, in theory.
Well, there's also peacekeepers, is a way to put it, too. They're here to keep the peace. And we want to be, trust that they'll keep us all safe, whether you're someone that has done nothing wrong or someone that has done something wrong, either way.
Can we talk a little bit about, I'm curious about how voting is going to happen this year in Tacky in this coronavirus age. I know I talked to the city clerk not too long ago. She's waiting for some guidance and whether or not there'll be elections by mail, whether there'll be early absentee voting, how it's all going to pan out in September.
Well, waiting for the Senate to vote on their proposal for mailing this September and November. The House did pass a bill last week. Actually, we talked about it actually a little bit last week. And the idea is we're going to do a non-excuse absentee ballot, meaning you don't need an reason to get an absentee ballot.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to require that the Secretary of State mail everybody this form saying if you'd like to vote, mail this back to the clerk's office, as well as provide a way to do it online. And obviously, you can call the clerk yourself to get a form and then proceed to send it back and they'll mail you a ballot. And the ballot being postmarked by day of will count. And we'll also want to have the clerks be able to process ballots as they come in and secure them. So we let them figure out how to do that at their level.
Okay.
Have everybody voting in our primary. Do at least one Saturday or weekend day voting of the primary and final. And to obviously, proper healthcare sanitation of polling places. I do not think we have to instruct anyone to do that. But I mean, we put in the law just for the comfort of people to know that we're requiring it, even though I'm very confident that everybody is and will be and should be doing good healthcare practices no matter where they are.
Right. And even post-pandemic, hopefully, that'll be one of the lasting positive impacts from this whole experience.
Oh, I hope so. I still cannot get over the fact that I have to teach people to wash their hands. I was taught to wash my hands as a child. And, you know, given the nature of my line of work, I engage in a lot of handshaking, a lot of physical contact. Mm. So, frequent hand washing and being conscientious of my surroundings is very important.
Yeah. In your estimation, how is, phase two going in Massachusetts? And what is it that we can learn from other countries that have already passed this particular phase?
Well, there's basically two lessons in other countries. One is you just open up, or two, you phase open up. A lot of the heavily hit countries that have gotten through the top end of the curve and the descending section of the curve have done very slow rephased openings. And they're very, very cautious about this. You know, some places, for example, Hong Kong moved from, four people at a restaurant, period. So, I mean, you're trying to get up to 10, trying to move up to the next number. Same thing in Korea, although Korea has had three hot spots in less than 2 weeks, and they've now proceeded to shut down certain areas of the country because they want to do massive contact tracing again. Some have been behaving well in their private businesses because there's a personal responsibility, which I keep repeating myself, and some have been more challenged. And some other countries which are looking to open economies up sooner than later are still in a high spike. And if you watch national news, same thing's happening in the United States. So monitoring continues to be very, very important for all countries. I hope people understand that here in the United States also, monitoring is very important to try to make sure that they are not having to do massive lockdowns, but maybe short lockdowns here and there to do proper contact tracing. Also remind folks that countries like Indonesia has now become the second highest death rate in Asia, and it's a warm weather country of 270 million people, and their healthcare system is nothing like ours, much less adequate, to be honest with you. And they're trying to do a phase reopening despite the rising death count, and they've been pausing as they go along, trying to figure out. They're one of the late responders to this pandemic. Brazil has rapidly moved to the top five of death count, smaller country than ours, other warm weather country. Healthcare system is already been overwhelmed, a lot of dense populations, and the president who continues to defy the existence of the disease, which resulted in health ministers resigning. So when you're looking at news footage of people building mass graves in advance of actual death count, that's not reassuring. And Mexico has done that as well. They've been building mass graves in advance. Mm. So locally, I did a little drive around on Wednesday, had a run to Evans. I've seen more restaurants open for takeout at minimum that were not open before.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen more storefronts opening, but also providing opportunities for delivery, mail delivery, in-person delivery, or scheduled pickups. People know that I'm a comic book guy, and I've been able to work with my own comic book store to try to get stuff. But even in their case, they're limiting number of people to store and they're limiting number of people that can browse through the rack. So if you're a comic book collector, part of the relaxation, fun part of it is to look at the books there, flip through a few, figure out which you want to buy.
Yeah.
They restrict people from actually standing in the rack. You actually have to take what you want to look and browse and move to a different part of the store. So people are taking this very seriously. And I'm sure many are. Simon's Mall's open this week. They opened new malls in Massachusetts. And not surprising, very slow attendance so far. But it's also a weekday opening. Saturday is tomorrow. Today's Friday and Sunday. And you know, maybe there'll be a higher volume of people coming in, but they have to self-police, essentially, the number of people coming through. And each store has to self-police how many people are in the store. So it's going to be a challenge. But, no mask, no service. I see those signs everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, no shoes, no shirt, no service. Now you just add one line. No shoes, no shirt, no mask, no service.
Yeah.
And
Do you think, Tacky, that the state is prepared for a second wave of the virus in the fall if it happens?
Yeah, I think we'll be in good shape for a second wave. I mean, the longer preparation, the first wave for a worst case scenario was wildly successful, despite the fact that we still have a massive tragedy of 7,000 people passing away. Despite all that, I think the place that we need to do better prepared for is the place where 60% of people die, which is our assisted living facilities and nursing homes. We have to do a better job there. And it's been an ongoing process of secondary studies to encourage, incentivize, and I think down the road, we're going to have to start issuing fines and penalties or something to these facilities to come up to grade.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we're not fighting and penalizing anybody now. We're trying to do financial incentives and more inspections to check in on them to make sure everything's okay.
Right.
But, two-thirds of all your deaths come from those facilities. We have to definitely do better oversight. The governor has required hospitals to maintain COVID sections. Okay. We're still in the prep. We still are sitting on a supply of ventilators. We're building our own PPE supply up at the state level, as well as individual facilities are building and continue to build PPE up as well in anticipation of a possible second surge. And our frontline guys, including Community Health Center, the Community Health Center, have been on the front line for this whole thing, trying to take care of patients and also to take COVID patients and do COVID testing, as well as the CVS and Walgreens also doing COVID testing.
Yeah.
And contact tracing.
The field have been closed, but have they been dismantled or are they still put together just in case?
I think, if I remember correctly, I think they're going to be taken down, but they're going to be basically standby. We know how to put them up quick now.
Right, okay.
So much thanks to the National Guard, city workers, convention center workers, state workers, all these folks that know how to work together short notice to put together triage centers or emergency centers such as the one at the Foxborough area, the D.C. Center, mm-hmm. D.C. Center, get the bank wrong in my head again, the Boston Convention Center.
Yeah.
Given how we would do that in a short period of time, once again, lesson learned. God forbid there's a huge second wave, we are better situated to rapid respond again.
Yeah. Before we go, a good place to end, I guess, is a census reminder, as we have been doing during these chats.
Yeah, absolutely. The state continues to trend slightly against the country. We're 63% as a state, but Quincy is 1% behind the state, so we're 62%. So our neighbors around us, I don't have to say over and over again, at least 8 to 5 to 10 percentage points ahead of Quincy. In the count, they're actually ahead of us. Braintree, Wayne, Randolph, Milton, all are doing better than state average and much better than ours. So for people who don't like to get more mail, people in my district, because it can only mail in my own district, we'll be getting a reminder to fill out the census sometimes in the next 2 weeks. So you're my constituent. You'll be listening to this because you're going to get a piece of mail most likely to your name or current resident if your address is in the residency book. To remind you to fill the census out. So please do 2020census.gov.
Great. Thanks, Tacky. It's great to see you. Be well, and we'll catch up again next week.
Absolutely. Good to see you. Please be well, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right. Bye-bye.